He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. It's Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. At 7:55, I was supposed to give away some free stuff, and I forgot. I stink. I'm sorry. So we're doing it again. ESPN 102.5 The Game has your chance to win a pair of tickets to Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Playoffs as the Preds go for the sweep against the Blackhawks Thursday night. So you know the drill. You send us a photo via Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram of you showing your Preds pride, and you use the hashtag RockTheGold. And I'm going to make this right, so we're going to get our winner. The winner is Greg Freeman, the Twitter handle at CREG. I can't. CREG. I don't know. Greg Freeman. You submitted a photo on Twitter. To claim your tickets, you need to call 615-399-1029. Only Greg, not any of the rest of you. 615-399-1029. Greg, you pandered and it worked. We love that photo. 615-399-1029. Greg, thanks for the picture. The next giveaway is going to be at 8:40. So now that we've got that out of the way, let's get to some good stuff from Ross Tucker joining us from NBC SN and Sirius XM. Ross, thanks for taking some time this morning.
Yeah, my pleasure. How are you guys?
Oh, we're fantastic.
Doing very well, Ross. Let me ask you first and foremost just about this voluntary workout situation. What are your thoughts in general on the amount of players that do or do not show up to this? How important really is it to the development of a roster, especially a young one?
Well, I can tell you this much. It wasn't really voluntary, certainly in New England. I was struck by the stark contrast from when I was in Buffalo, and it was clearly very voluntary, and a lot of guys weren't there, to New England where, I mean, you were just there. You were there. And I think that says something. And so I think you want the guys to be there, and you want to really create the culture of having guys on your team that want to be there or feel like they need to be there. I think the only guy I ever heard of that New England didn't go was Ty Law, and that was right before I went there. And he had some deal worked out with Belichick where he had to come back and run a better 40 time than he did the year before or something like that. But for the most part, they're there, and a big reason why is guys like Brady are there. I mean, when your best players are there, everybody should be there.
So, Ross, when people typically don't go, do they notify the team in advance?
No, they don't. I don't think so. I mean, sometimes they have that dialogue where they let them know, hey, I'm going to be here, I'm not going to be here. It really depends on the relationship. But remember, it is voluntary, so they don't have to be there. So they don't really have to give a team a heads up. But usually, you know, the coaches might reach out to their players, you know, at some point in the off season and just say, hey, what's your plans for the off season? Are you coming in? And usually the players will give their coaches a heads up there. Wow, what's going on? Who's not showing up?
Yeah, Derrick Henry missing from day one of our.
Oh yeah. That's right. That surprised me. That really surprised me. And I can tell you this much. You know, I played for Mike Mularkey in Buffalo in 04 and 05. And, you know, I'm sure he'll say all the right things, but I can't imagine that he's very happy with that. And it's certainly not the right way for Henry to ingratiate himself with that coaching staff. I can promise you that. Now, look, there are some guys that have trainers. I know some of the Miami guys used to love working out back at Miami on the college campus. So maybe that's the deal with Derek. I don't know. But I can tell you Mularkey will not be happy about that.
Ross, when you look at the top of the draft, and obviously we're just a little over a week away, when you look at the top of the draft, everybody feels like Myles Garrett's the number one pick, and that may be true, and that's fine. But I can't remember a draft where we've had more sort of disagreement amongst experts with who the best players are in the top 5 to 10 picks. Do you see the same thing with this draft class?
What it seems like to me is that Myles Garrett pretty clearly is the guy you feel best about taking number one when you take everything into account. And then after that, it seems that there's a hodgepodge of five or six guys, and there's no real consensus of who that next guy is, which I guess is good for Tennessee. You know, if you're drafted in five, if you're where the Titans are, it's good because you're going to get one of those guys, and you might be getting a guy that's worthy of the number two overall pick in the draft, but for different reasons, you know, you're able to get them at five. You know, whether that's Malik Hooker or Marshawn Lattimore, whoever the guy ends up being that the Titans take. Obviously, if you're the Titans, you got to hope that teams trade up to try to get one of these quarterbacks, or maybe the Bears just take one at three and keep moving some of these top guys down to you so that you have your choice of sort of that second group, that second tier that involves Jonathan Allen and Fournette and Malik Hooker and Marshawn Lattimore and Solomon Thomas out of Stanford.
So you mentioned trading up, Ross, and it's interesting because the conversation here has really centered around trading out of the five pick. But aside from the quarterbacks, is there enough up there that you see teams really wanting to trade all the way up to five?
No, I don't think so. I think that there's enough depth that I would be surprised if a team moved to five, unless, I mean, the only reason you move to five is because you think the Jets are going to take your guy, right? So there'd be two reasons why a team would do that. Number one would be a quarterback. You think maybe the Jets are going to take Trubisky, and so you move up to five because you really like him and you want him. And that's a possibility. Either that, or you look at the Jets and think, oh, man, they're going to take, you know, based on how the draft plays out, they don't really need another D lineman like Allen or Solomon Thomas. They're going to take Marshawn Lattimore, or they're going to take Malik Hooker, and you're a team that potentially really wants that safety or Jamal Adams or whoever the case might be. You really want that player, and you don't think that, you know, whoever the next best alternative is, or you don't think that guy will be available when you pick. That'd be the other reason why you would trade up to five. My question then would be, you know, do the Titans feel good enough about the other guys they would get in order to be willing to not take a Lattimore or a Hooker or Jamal Adams, whoever it is that the Titans have ranked that high as their preferred corner or safety?
Ross, what the heck are the Houston Texans doing at quarterback?
I guess they're going to end up drafting somebody. I don't know. I mean, I think that they really put their eggs in the Tony Romo basket, and it cracked. It blew up on them. So right now they've got Tom Savage. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of funny to me that I think that they'd probably win more games this year if they had Ryan Fitzpatrick as their quarterback than Tom Savage. So, you know, I think a lot of times teams, I guess politically you could say, don't feel good about doing that because he was already there. Same with like a Brian Hoyer. But, you know, that's a big reason why they got rid of Hoyer last year and went with Osweiler, because Hoyer had such a terrible playoff game. And they would have been much better last year with Hoyer than they were with Osweiler. And they would have saved themselves a lot of headache, aggravation, and money. Seems like now that they're probably pretty likely to draft a guy and pair him with Savage. But it's a shame. I mean, not if you're a Titans fan, but if you're a Houston fan, it's a shame that they've got such a good roster and yet they're so poorly managed at that position. It's amazing, actually.
Fantastic stuff from Ross Tucker. Hey, Ross, we know you're into ball cannon. Tell me a little about what is ballcannon.com?
Well, you guys have seen the guys catching balls off the jug machine at practice, right?
Yeah.
You know, whether it's Titans or the guys at UT or whatever. Well, the deal is the ball cannon is sort of a portable jugs machine, just way, way cooler than everybody that is into football, even if you're not into football. If you have a child between ages of 6 and I'd say 15, just do yourself a favor, especially with the weather being so nice now. Go to ballcannon.com. Just watch the video. And when you buy it for your kid and there's a star of the neighborhood for about 3 months till everybody else gets one, just remember that Ross sent you on the radio to ballcannon.com. I can guarantee your kid will be the star of the neighborhood until everybody else gets one. The thing is that awesome.
It's fantastic stuff, man. Follow him on Twitter, at Ross Tucker NFL. Ross, we appreciate your time. We appreciate you coming on, and we'll check out ballcannon.com, buddy.
Absolutely. See you guys.
I'm not going to lie. I wish I would have had a ball cannon when I was a kid.
Yeah. I mean, it actually, like,
How you go in the yard when, like, everybody else is busy and you just throw the ball to yourself, like, way up in the air as high as you can go? Like, ball cannon would have solved all those problems.
I mean, it is pretty remarkable. You know, I want to sort of laugh at it, but it is so cool. I can't. I with all the things we have at our house, I'm not sure that this won't be added at some point. Although, I can't imagine the amount.
Can I just come over and play ball cannon?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That's just I'm just going to like get a ball cannon beacon and throw it up in the sky. And when you see it, it means everybody come over.
Like the Batman light.
Yeah, we're going to get into the ball cannon. Ross said a couple of things I want to get into. Let's unpack some of what Ross just told us. We'll do that next up on Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. Sarah Bareilles just getting us all happy for the day. It's Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Springtime's here. Nothing makes you feel more springtime than Sarah Bareilles. We're going to give one of you guys a $5,000 backyard makeover with our backyard makeover contest brought to you by Dickens Turf and Landscape Supply, Family Leisure, More and More Garden Center, and Pave Professional Audio Video Engineering. To enter, visit thegamenashville.com. Click the contest link and submit a photo of your backyard today. And speaking of photos, don't forget, every hour on all of our shows, we're giving away two tickets. So you want to make sure that you hit the at 102.5 The Game with hashtag Rock the Gold. The next winner is just a few minutes away. So we'll be continuing to give those away. You want to make sure you're listening because we'll call out a name and a phone number. So Ross Tucker just joined us. And in the process of talking, Ross was able to speak to a couple of things that I think are interesting. One, the difference in the culture at Buffalo and the difference in the culture at New England when he went from place to place and what was expected of voluntary workouts, which I think is valid, and also made a pretty brazen statement about what he thinks Malarkey would be feeling about anyone missing a voluntary workout. Voluntary or not, you know, that's from somebody that played for him. So when you've had the chance to sort of digest that, what do you think?
Well, I do find the cultural differences very interesting. So, like, I'd love to know what Cleveland Browns' policy is right now or the last 5 years. Like, what's their policy been like? I don't think it changes much about my perception of the Derrick Henry situation. I do think Mike Malarkey is an old-school guy. I don't think there's any question about that. But it was also a long time ago that he was the head coach in Buffalo. So, in his quotes on Monday, he kind of said, well, you know, I used to be disappointed. I've kind of changed a little bit of my thoughts on that. And again, what I'm surprised by, and we don't know this for a fact, but we're sort of guessing at this because DeMarco Murray said he had not spoken with him. Marcus Mariota said he had not spoken with Derrick Henry. What I think I'm surprised by, and what I find almost virtually impossible, is that Derrick Henry literally didn't send a single text or phone call or email to any one human being in the building. Like, I find that almost impossible. Like, the way that we communicate with each other now, like Snapchat and Facebook and Twitter and all this other stuff, like, there's a million different ways to tell somebody that you're not going to be there. I find it almost impossible that he didn't, but I guess it is. And that still I come back to is I don't think this is a big deal. This, to me, I don't question his commitment or any of that stuff to this team. If you're in that locker room, maybe you feel differently about that, and I understand that, and maybe Jarrell Casey does feel differently about that. But I'm more about like what you're saying, which is the professionalism of the situation. And did you handle that well? Is it a small little tiny blip on the radar that he needs to correct and won't happen again? I feel like that's probably what this is.
Well, and cultural changes are different from locker room to locker room. That's part of what players go for, you know. And in fact, it was a big deal that the pool tables and ping pong tables were taken out of the facilities at the Bills now with the new head coach. The Bills' new staff has gone in and taken all of that stuff out, and some of that has been there for a decade, you know, plus. So that was actually a news story for the Buffalo Bills about the fact that, you know, ping pong tables and pool tables are being removed because it's a sign that culturally there's a change there.
You can't have nice things.
And I think that it's funny because you go back and forth on it. Like, at some point, if your team's winning, then that's a reason why you have a player's coach that really gets the guys and understands how the guys can be the guys. And if your team's not winning, then that's an indication that your coach is too lax. Like, everybody's just going to take it, twist it however they want. You know, but for him to come in and say he thinks that's obviously no matter – he said Malarkey will say all the right things, but he won't be pleased. And I'm with Julian. I mean, Julian, I felt like, in the grand scheme of things, I felt like Malarkey's quote was not all that kind. You know, I felt
sounded
like
real passive aggressive.
Yeah, I took it the same way.
I agree. I also think there's sort of an exacerbation there where he's just like, it's whatever, guys. Like, it's passive aggressive. I agree with you guys, but there's also this, hey, guys are going to do what they're going to do. Like, I've been around this league a long time.
Clearly annoyed the fact that I'm not sure right now if he's upset about it, knowing why Derrick Henry didn't show up. But at that point in time, not knowing why he's there,
that I agree with.
He sounded
totally agree with that.
But I think the quote, the moment for him, he sounded frustrated. I mean, no matter how it went down in the moment, it definitely seemed like it ticked him off to me. I mean, I that's how I read it. And then you have Ross coming in and saying, hey, he's going to say all the right things, you know, from somebody that played for him. He's going to say all the right things, but he's not going to be happy about it. I think the quote sort of backs that up. So, you know, while we're having a conversation, if it's a big deal, I kind of got the impression it was a big deal for Mularkey.
Yeah, you think like a week prior to the draft and you have these voluntary workouts, he wants to be answering to why his top running back pick from last season's not showing up to workouts. And he has no reason why he's not there.
I don't think
he wants to.
I totally agree that not having the information quickly at hand is a problem. And that is he has a right to sort of be, all right, that's not cool, Derek. You know, like, you need to let me know what's going on. I agree with that. Now, like we said, let's change this whole hypothetical situation around. Let's say he calls Mike Mularkey on Friday and says, listen, coach, hey, Derek Henry here. You know, the guy that you was your backup last year. I'm going to be at Alabama. Finals go through May 6th or May 5th. I won't be able to make it for voluntary workouts, but here's who I'm training with. Here's the regiment and the routine that I'm working every week. Do we need to get this approved with the strength and conditioning staff? Here's what's going on. Here's my plan and my strategy. I'll be there the second my classes are over. I think Mark Mularkey probably goes, great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Have a good time, dude. We'll see you when you come back.
Or back when they had their exit interviews and the season was over, he could have told him, hey, coach, this spring I'm going to be taking classes at Alabama. So there's a potential that I'll be there until May where I'm going to miss voluntary workouts instead of the day prior.
And the thing is even with that, I agree, you could have given some
more. It's not like up and out of the blue.
But I guarantee you Derrick Henry didn't know the day of the voluntary report date back in whenever. You know what I mean? Like in January.
He had to know that it wasn't going to be – you know, I mean, classes end like in May, so he knew it was going
to
be.
But to suggest that that Derrick Henry, that again speaks to the handler or the agent or the PR representative.
Somebody in his camp knew that finals were going to conflict with this. Somebody in his camp should have.
At some point, and the first time that you figure that out, wherever that point is on the calendar, whenever you realize, oh, there's some overlap here with these two things, it's just like what you do with your wife. It's like, oh, hey, I know we've got this thing here, but I've got to do this thing here. The second you find out about it, you have to tell her.
Right.
Like, the second I know I've got to be somewhere, she knows exactly the second I know.
And I think that speaks, again, if I'm going to put, like, through all this process, if I'm going to put blame of how we got here, because I think that obviously missing a few weeks of workouts is not a big deal, and I'm never going to fault somebody for continuing their education. But I think that the real fault here lies squarely on whoever reps him, whoever his representative is, whoever his agent is. Like, that's what agents do. Agents make sure that guys know where to be and when they know. It's like a tour manager in the music business, like a tour manager that's on the bus. Like, that's your road manager. His main job is to make sure.
Be here, this time.
He's making sure, and like for the artist, he's making sure you know what time you have to call radio stations and all that. Like, they're calling in and handing a phone to Eric Church. It's not like Eric Church just sits down and says, oh, yeah, I got to, like, he doesn't get a reminder on his phone. Somebody walks
Eric
up to
Church
him.
Doesn't have Google Calendar?
No. Somebody walks up to him, presses the button, and hands it to him, and that's the phone number. So he doesn't even have to think, you know. And that's the way the process works. Derrick Henry has that in an agent, so it's really the agent that failed in this. I just think it's interesting that we, you know, were able to talk to Ross and get sort of a perspective from somebody that actually played for Mularkey, and also the cultural difference. Like, I don't think it's a bad thing when you speak to what Jarrell Casey was saying just in general. I don't think it's a bad thing to have a little bit of a we want everybody here mentality, because that's what a lot of the successful teams do.
And that maybe that point is probably lost on all of this, is that you want your team to be the Patriots style of operation, where everyone feels on their own level of responsibility and accountability to show up. Like, that is a good thing. Now, as a second-year player who's a backup who's trying to finish his degree, are there small exceptions in the world? Of course there are. But I think on the whole that all but two players were there?
Right.
That's a good
– That's fantastic.
That's great for the Titans. So, yeah. And if one of them is a guy who's just been signed and the other one is a guy trying to finish his degree for a couple of days – I think they're in a really good spot. That part of it doesn't really concern me overly all that much.
Yeah, I feel like that all speaks to the cultural change that's happening there too, and just in general. And Mularkey talked a little bit about that in the press conference the other day, he talked a little bit about how people seem to be anxious to get back in the building. It's like they didn't want to leave. And I think that speaks to the cultural change that's happening. And I think that through that process, you know, Mularkey's trying to turn this team into that sort of a New England destination.
And who do we give credit for that?
John Robinson.
Oh, yes.
We always give all the credit to John Robinson.
There we go. Where does it always start?
John
Robinson.
You know, and it's funny because you look at like the Knicks as an example as a basketball franchise.
Why do that to me?
I'm sorry. But the argument can be made that the Knicks, no matter who goes in, will be bad because the front office all the way down, from the owner all the way down, they all just seem to be idiots. I think that what's happened in the last couple of years for the Titans is that top-down, trickle-down moment has changed, and now the perception is that the trickle-down is a positive. So we're going to do something kind of cool next up. Ovin St. Preux, who is a UFC fighter, going to come in. This is going to be really cool. He's going to hang out with us. We'll talk a little UFC next with Ovin's coming up on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Julian Council producing. And the room just got a heck of a lot tougher, and there's no denying that. I mean, this is fantastic. I need, you know, everybody knows this. I'm a small guy, and I like to run my mouth. I need you two because, you know, Braden, you're big, and then we get an MMA fighter coming in. So this is amazing. Ovin St. Preux joining us, man. You're fighting on Saturday. Thanks for taking some time to hang out with us.
Thank you for having me.
So the first question is, if I walk into a bar and I run my mouth, will you help me? That's all I need.
Yeah, I know you. So
okay.
I'll help you.
Okay, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Well, and that's the question. As someone who trains professionally, fights professionally, you hear a lot of stories about how people out in public are more likely to like mess with you more. Is that like they get like beer muscles more? Like do they act like that when they find out, hey, this guy is a fighter and he's a professional? Do people act like that, or are they more timid?
They act like it, but they're definitely timid. You can see it by the you can see it by the body language too. So it's kind of funny, just because as long as I've been doing mixed martial arts, I actually never been in like a bar fight or anything, and it's different. And a lot of times people would be like, "What would happen if what would happen if something was to happen?" I tell them the truth. I'm like, "Look, I'll probably just, you know, kick them in the groin or something."
That's my move. You can't steal my move. That's the one move I got.
That fight would be over quickly. That would end fast.
Speaking of fights, we do want to let everybody know you're fighting Saturday at Bridgestone Arena, UFC fight night, part of a big card. And I've been to a bunch of UFC fights in Vegas. I'm telling you, UFC puts on an amazing experience. It's a great, great opportunity to go down and see some awesome stuff. So everybody, Ticketmaster, tickets are available. You want to get down there and check it out.
Well, and part of the reason a lot of our audience probably recognizes your name, not just from your fighting career, but from your playing days at University of Tennessee, certainly playing football up there for them. You and I were talking a little bit before the segment came on that there's some memories back there in the early 2000s of my initial thought when I started talking to you is how much that campus and facility and area has changed since our time there and how different it is today.
And just letting you know, I'm jealous. I'm jealous every time I go back and I'm walking in. I'm like, man, I was there the other day and I was talking to one of the head trainers. And I was like, man, everything just changed dramatically. Like the new facility, the weight room, the athletic center. It's just they got like Starbucks, like IHOP. And I'm like looking, I'm like, this is ridiculous. And I mean, it's definitely like, you know, when I was there, when they were saying, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, they did everything. Even the stadium changed too, so.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Speaking of the stadium, I'm curious for you, because you spent, you know, college football going out in these massive stadiums. Now you walk into an octagon in an arena. So what's the rush like comparatively between the two?
Well, the thing is, when you actually, at Neyland Stadium, there's 10 other players on the field with you. And, you know, if you count the other players and other team, essentially there's 20 other players with you. So, like, when you're in the octagon, there's you yourself and there's another fighter. So if anything happens, like, if you have a misassignment during a play, you get your other teammates to kind of save your life. And a lot of times that happens. So, and if you, you know, get caught up under a pile, a lot of people, sometimes people will see, sometimes people won't. You know, when you're fighting in the octagon, you know, if you get hit, the crowd will let you know. If you get slammed, the crowd will let you know. So everybody sees just two guys in there. And, you know, basically you can't run away from nothing.
Ovince St. Preux joining us here. The fight is April 22nd at Bridgestone Arena. Ticketmaster.com. Tickets are still available. And you were a wrestler in high school kind of growing up, right? You had some of that background before you got to Tennessee and played ball. What was the process like for you following graduation and getting into the sport in general? How did you get started in the first place?
I really just wanted to get in shape. I mean, if you look at a lot of the football guys, like, to be honest, as a college athlete, what you want to do is basically have fun. Be a college student, be a college athlete, and a lot
hang
of time,
out at Cool Beans.
Yeah, that's basically what you want to do. You don't work out. The only reason you work out is because you're going to get in trouble. You're not going to be like, yeah, I'm going to go to the gym tonight and work out. The only reason you're working out because you're going to get in trouble. But you're still going to eat the same when you get done. So, what that leads you to, you know, an extra 50 pounds a year later. I seen a couple guys coming back, and I'm like, man, what happened to you? So I'm like, okay, I need something. I need a niche. I need something, you know, after football to actually keep me in shape. And I was introduced to mixed martial arts.
So tell me a little bit about the process of prepping for a fight. Like, is it mostly you looking at yourself and saying, here's what I want to accomplish, or are you looking a lot at your opponent in this situation?
Not just game planning. Game planning, and I think the biggest thing about it is game planning and making sure your state of mind is good. Football, I spend my whole entire football career trying to, you know, gain weight. And mixed martial arts, I spend my whole entire career now either losing weight or trying to maintain weight, then I have to lose weight. So now it's the big thing about it is, you know, I think the past 8 years is when, you know, food just got into play. You know, the cleaner you eat, the longer you train, the better you train. Now it's all about eating clean and stuff, and I'm not gonna lie, so hard.
We all love pizza and beer and wings. I mean, it's
hard.
So right now, if you stepped on a scale, what would you weigh at?
This morning, 216.
What is that? What you normally walk around at when you're not training? So what's that? Like, how fast is that?
To be honest, the past 3 months, I actually been walking around about 223. So when I came in yesterday, I was 220. So I still got about 10 more pounds to go by Friday.
How difficult is it to maintain energy when you're dropping that much weight? Like, how do you physically handle that?
Well, cutting about 15, for my size, cutting about 15 pounds is not bad at all. So is when there's a couple fights before on Tuesday, when I flew in on Tuesday, there was a fight. There was about two fights to go. I came in at 229.5 Tuesday, and it sucked. And that's basically cutting 20 pounds within 4 days.
Oh, my God.
25 pounds within 4 days.
So when you say clean eating, because we'll go a little into nutrition here, because I think it's we're starting as a country to realize how, like you said, it's really hard. I love my, like, pizza, and I love my chicken wings, and I love all
that
stuff.
It's hard in the South, too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So what is it, like, give people advice, all right, you know, not the 20 pounds in 4 days, but if you're over a three-month training period and you're trying to eat well, what is clean eating for you? What does that mean for people out there?
It depends. If I'm probably a month out from a fight, I try to make sure everything is at least 90 to 100% clean. If I'm, you know, getting ready for a fight, I can be 70 to 80. I mean, 70 to 80, I mean, the weekends you can kind of do what you want to do, but Sunday I'm back at it again just because I'm training throughout the week. But essentially, healthy. You get carbs. Your complex carbs, your protein, vegetables, and your essential fats. And good fats are like olive oil, olive oil. Like, you get peanuts. You get
a lot of
avocados. Yeah. So those are the good fats. I try to stick to that. As long as I stick to that, my body feels good.
Tell me if you can think back to this moment, because I love UFC so much and I respect the heck out of what you guys do, but I can never imagine the first time you're in the octagon and you actually get hit. I mean, like that's somebody hitting you. Like, what does that stunned moment really feel like?
To be honest, you don't remember anything. they call it the octagon jitters. You don't remember anything. Like, your first fight, especially in the UFC, you don't remember nothing. Like, oh, this is what I did, this is what I did. As you're looking at film, you're like, I don't remember none of this. Wow. So it's just one of them things where, like you was talking about you know, the bar fights and stuff. Everything that you do within a fight, probably I'll say 60-70% of the things that you do go off of reflex.
Instinct.
Yeah, just you've been in that situation so many different times, like your body just basically takes over itself.
It's muscle memory.
Yeah.
Is absolutely what it is. Ovince St. Preux joining us here. Tickets available, Ticketmaster.com, April 22nd at Bridgestone Arena. And so, obviously, you're going to get hit in this sport. And you said you don't remember it, but has there ever been a time where you, like, wake up the next morning and you're just like, oh, man, like, that one I paid for, or that one I remember on the positive side, where you're like, man, he's going to feel that one?
Not really. You just know after a fight you're going to feel sore. So especially if it goes, you know, a lot of people would be like, man, you know, make sure you go all three rounds. I want to see a good fight. I'm like looking at a guy, I'm like, for what? Regardless, if I win the fight, I still got hit. Regardless, I'm going to wake up the next morning saying I'm hurting too. So you're trying to make it a situation when you try to get in and get out.
It's Ovince St. Preux. UFC Fight Night is coming here, Bridgestone Arena, and I'm telling you, you want to go. I see here the main card airs live on FS1 at, 9 o'clock our time. What time does the actual event start here in Nashville? Do we know? We'll find that out.
Doors open at 4:30.
Doors open at 4:30. Okay.
There's plenty to do on Broadway.
You never want to miss it because there are so many great fights before it actually gets to TV. Yeah. That's part of what makes the experience so awesome when you go. So check it out. You want to be there. Ovince is one of the guys you want to root for. Ovince, thanks for taking the time to join us, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
So we got to give away some tickets. It is 8:40. I got to give away two tickets. And this is, you know, we're doing this every hour. We're giving away two tickets to game 4 of the Stanley Cup playoffs as the Preds go for the sweep against the Blackhawks. You send us a photo on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram of you showing your Preds pride, and you tag Rock the Gold. That's how you do it. And this hour's winner, Tim Lampley. So, Tim, you have 10 minutes and 25 seconds to call 615-399-1029. Again, 615-399-1029. And only Tim, none of the rest of you, Tim Lampley only. Call 615-399-1029. When we come back, we've got a little bit of a conversation about how we got here with the Preds and why it's galvanized all of us together. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Cause every time I see a bubbly face, I get the tingles in. He's Braden Gall, I'm Jason Fitz. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Intern Casey crushing it back there. Julian Council spinning the hits. And we do want to tell you, obviously, I won't hide my love for UFC. I'm a big fan. And
thank you for not mentioning my boxing career.
Yeah,
an
I decided.
Fighter, thank
I,
you.
I decided that was probably in the best interest.
I mean, I am undefeated.
Right.
But I am a lover, not a fighter.
Well, Cool Hand Luke Sanders, UFC fighter, local guy, going to join us in studio on Friday. So we're going to keep getting you set for this. And I do want to stress again, it's a cool, UFC is a really fun event live. So if you're into it at all on TV, go, because it's 1,000 times better.
It took me 3 months to drop 15 pounds. It takes him 3 days.
I can't believe that. It's you know,
offended by that.
And he still has cheat days. Like, how does that happen? You know, I walk by an Oreo and I'm like, poof, and then, you know, he just.
No, you're all like clean right now.
No,
you're,
I am.
You're
I
being
am.
All like getting ready for bikini season.
2 weeks
aren't you?
Into getting ready for bikini season. I am.
You a two-piece kind of guy?
Noted, I am caffeine free for almost 2 weeks. So I went immediately overnight from.
You're insane.
From pots and pots of coffee and multiple energy drinks
to all water. It's a regular, normal, smart, rational decision to eliminate things like cakes and donuts from your lifestyle and fried food and fast food. I get all of that. It is irrational to remove caffeine from your daily diet. That is just stupidity.
Yeah, well, if there's anything I think we can all figure out, like, I don't do moderation very well, so that whole just cut back thing is like, I feel like I'm cutting back when I don't eat the entire cake. Like,
I have to avoid the aisle in the grocery store altogether. Like, I cannot go the ice cream aisle. I cannot go down, like, the chips and cookies aisle. I have to just avoid. Like, here's the thing about a grocery store. Stay on the outside.
Right.
If you stay on the outside of a grocery store, you won't get yourself into trouble. Because once I bring it home, my wife and I can go through a box of cereal in a day.
Oh, yeah.
without even thinking about it.
I've never really understood why that's a big deal, though. If I bought a whole cake, I'm going to eat the whole cake eventually.
Not at
Might
one
as
time.
Well just eat it. What's the matter if I eat it once or over 3 days? But, you know, so from the you go from the outside, but everybody has been on the outside of the Preds, right? And now they're all coming in, and we're watching the interest peak. And the
bandwagon's starting to it's dipping below the waterline.
And it was remarkable. Again, last night I did the Waiting for Wishes charity event for Kevin Carter, and it was remarkable walking around and just talking to people, and what they wanted to talk about for the first time wasn't it wasn't Mariota, it wasn't the Titans, it was actually the Preds. And it sort of shows you what's happening right now with this takeover. But you made a really good point earlier that I don't think we've really delved into. And yes, you. And what's
surprised by that.
What's amazing about it is, I think you're right. You said earlier, it takes an unexpected moment to bring everybody together. And I'm going to go with one of the most, let's say, galvanizing, like, come together Titan moments is the Music City Miracle. And the Music City Miracle not only is a remembered play, but it created generations of a generation of fans. It brought everybody together with a, we are rooting for this team, this unreal moment where we felt like the underdog and everybody comes together, right? Like it's sort of, well, it tickles at the heartstrings and brings everybody together.
I mean, you can walk down any street in the city right now and there's a pulse, there's an energy, and it's entirely because of what the hockey team is doing. And it only, like, not just sports, but there are other things in life that do this, but in general, sports, especially to a community, bring people together so quickly, and galvanize is a good word for that. But it's especially the unexpected, like, nobody thought 3-0. Like,
no.
Seriously, like, even the Animal and even our best Predators fans of all time probably were okay. Would have, if they said in a moment of truth, 2-1, okay, I'll take 2-1. 3-0 with a smoke, like, absolutely smoking them in Chicago, and a 2-0 comeback at home. Like, nobody saw this coming.
I did.
I knew that was coming, except for the Oracle. Obviously, the Oracle.
I saw this coming.
Undefeated.
We can pull the tape on Thursday morning.
Like
if
I said
we need
before
to.
The series started.
Sure. Of course you did. Yeah. But the point is that I think sports has a unique ability to unexpectedly create a special thing, a special moment, a special tension, whatever you want to call it. And watching people file out of the building on Monday night at 12:15 in the morning, where it was still basically packed at 12:15 in the morning on a work night and school night for everybody, there is just, like, strangers are high-fiving and people are coursing onto the streets and having a great time, and there's a pulse and an energy to the city right now because of what the hockey team is doing. And it's because it's sort of this underdog, unexpected reality that's taking place. And sports is very unique in that it's in its ability to do that. And it happens, you know, like MTSU last year, beating Michigan State. I mean, this whole place, the whole country was focused on Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Right.
Because of this unexpected thing that happened when they beat Michigan State in the first round. And again, this is not the same thing as a 2-15 matchup. I mean, the Predators are a better team than that. So I'm not trying to compare it to that. But nobody saw 3-0 coming, and certainly nobody saw a sweep coming. And if that were to happen tomorrow night, like, this weekend is going to be wild in this city, and the buildup for the second round is going to be insane, and it's going to bring everybody together, and it will be this unexpected, like, wave of joy that everyone gets to ride, and sports kind of does that for people.
Well, and you know, I mentioned the Music City Miracle earlier, and as I've said before, ironically, I was at the Music City Miracle, and there's a picture.
And now 400,000 people, because that's how many people fit in the stadium, of course, that day.
But my picture was on the cover of the Tennessean the next day. It said Tennessean, and at the letter N was me and two buddies walking down the street after the Music City Miracle,
so
jumping up and down.
No evidence of you actually being in the stadium, just walking down the street.
That's fair. Should be noted, I was not wearing any Titan gear, because obviously I didn't grow up a Titans fan. But my memory, I mean, we had the worst seats imaginable, which actually was great to actually see the play as it was going down. But my memory is not as much of the play as it is walking down the street afterwards and seeing everybody pour onto Second Avenue, you know, and that was a different time on Second Avenue. Like, downtown didn't have that energy at the time. And so,
yeah, Second Avenue was a little
seedier then.
It wasn't quite as fancy as it is now.
But you mentioned the energy around the street and the sort of the energy. And I think it comes from the unexpected here, because once you're good, you expect to be very good. Once you're very good, you expect to be great. Once you're great, you expect championships. And if you don't achieve whatever you expect, you're always sort of down on a team. And so I think that these moments are the ones that bring everybody together to set a new standard of expectation. So I think it's really cool to see, because of the unexpected nature of it, the very we're tired of listening to Blackhawk fans thing is actually bringing a lot of people together.
No question.
I do agree with Darren McFarland. If you don't want to listen to him, then do something. You know, go win a cup. You know, but I will also say
that's the players, though. That's different.
Well, and I would also say, again, like I said earlier to a caller, you win one cup in this city, the answer from Blackhawks fans will be, you have one. All right, we have like a bazillion, you have one. So you're not going to shut those people up. Like, you're not going to do that. But that underdog mentality coming from out of nowhere is what's really brought us together and made the moment special, I think.
Well, and you package that with how Game 3 went down. And to be down 2-0 in your own building and have that place be basically quiet, not of its own problem. I mean, the team was down 2-0, and to sort of feel there was a different feel around. And you and I have talked about this, watching the team anytime they're down by two goals. And this is the first team watching the Nashville Predators that anytime they're down by two goals, I feel like that they're still in the game.
Right.
And previous iterations of this team, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, down two goals was a death sentence. You were done down by two goals. But they came out of the tunnel in period three on Monday night, and I kind of looked around and I was like, they could absolutely score a couple of goals here. Like, this team is capable of doing it. Now, Corey Crawford played a great game in the first two periods, and lo and behold, Philip Forsberg, the superstar of all the superstars on that team, the best player on the team who will eventually become, I think, the best player in franchise history because of nights like Monday night where he scores two goals down by two to send it to overtime, and then the place goes nuts. And it was the most intense 14 minutes, 15, 16 minutes of hockey, whatever it was, in overtime. Now, nobody's sitting down anywhere, and I'm not sure Chicago had possession of the puck at all. Like, it was a total level of domination that I haven't seen in that series, and that's demoralizing if you're a Blackhawk fan or player.
I mean, the conversation with so many people has been, how do I get tickets to game four? And so it's really, because we said yesterday,
you listen to 102.5 The Game, and you tweet in hashtag rock the gold.
I mean, that's pretty obvious. But it's been funny that in the process of this conversation, you know, I asked yesterday, is there any way game four can sort of beat the hype? And just walking around town and talking to people, it can and it will. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, we're going to go unfiltered next, and I'm going to tell all of you what your role in this victory can be. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.